Just yesterday, the town board in Auburn, in the town of Auburn, decided to hold off on a frac sand mining moratorium, which would stop three proposed frac sand mining operations there. One of them would be a 1,200-acre mine. The board voted to hold off on the moratorium in hopes that the frac sand companies in question would agree with them on developers' agreements, meaning that they would make a deal with the town on things like hours of operation and whether the companies would help pay for roads and damaged by sand trucks. It's just one example of what town, village, and county governments across western Wisconsin are doing in reaction to a frac sand mining boom. It's been likened to a gold rush with the promise of numerous good-paying jobs and local investment, but the frac sand boom also has some citizens concerned about water pollution, harmful silica dust, noise, and destruction of area bluffs. So, it's up to local government to try and appease all parties. And this hour, we'll talk about some of their arrangements that have been made thus far. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined today by three men who follow this all very closely. First, I'd like to welcome Rick Stottleman, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Towns Association, which advises members on things like frac sand mining. Rick Stottleman joins us from Shawano. Rick, thanks so much for being on the program.
Good afternoon.
And also joining us by phone, we'd like to welcome James Hare. He is the editor of the Hay River Review, a publication which has extensively covered the rise of frac sand mining and many other things in and around the Prairie Farm region. James Hare, thank you for being here as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Rich.
And joining us in our Eau Claire studios is John Bailing. John is an attorney with Weld, Riley, Prenn, and Ritchie. It's a law firm that represents many clients, but among them, High Crush Propense, which is a frac sand company hoping to mine near Augusta. John Bailing, thanks for taking the time this afternoon.
Thank you, Rich.
And also, congratulations. I understand that you are going to be one of the new regents.
Thank you.
For the UW system. That sounds like some more work on your plate.
It's exciting news, but it will definitely increase my workload, but I take the responsibility seriously.
Absolutely, I'm sure you do. And to the listeners, I want everyone to know that we'd like to hear from you as well. We usually get a number of calls whenever we have a program on frac sand mining issues, and I hope to hear plenty of them this hour as well. We do have some callers on the line. We're going to ask you to hold just a little while, and then we'll get your comments on the air. So what do you think, listeners, about how your local government is handling the increase in frac sand mining? Give us a call, 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. I'd like to start with Rick Stottleman to kind of give us a little bit of background. This large increase in frac sand mining in western Wisconsin is still pretty new. I mean, it's been around, some of these companies have been around for a long time, but this real increase is just maybe 4 or 5 years old. What kind of a learning curve has there been for local town or village officials?
Well, I think, we've had aggregate mines of sand and gravel around the state for a long time. And as you said, there's been sand mines in parts of the state for substantial periods of time as well. I mean, the sand that we're talking about is actually a type of sand that's been used for cranberry bogs for a number of years, and so it's been something that we've had mining of. I think everybody should be aware that this is a type of material that can be used in frack drilling, which is being used in the Dakotas, Texas, and Pennsylvania for drilling for natural gas in particular and oil. And to that extent, the demand has come up, particularly with attempts to try to increase oil and natural gas exploration in our country. When you say learning curve, I'll be honest with you, even a year ago in January, I really didn't know a lot about this. We weren't being asked a lot of questions. And over the last year, there's been more and more questions raised. Our association has actually done 2 day-long sessions for town and village officials, as well as county officials and citizens up in the Eau Claire area. We had over 600 people in total at those 2 events. And a lot of it is just trying to understand what the local government's authority is, what can they do, what is reasonable, and trying to get out some basic information on you know, what type of agreements, licensing ordinances, permits it can do, and try to be in a situation where local officials can answer questions from people that are concerned about it, the property owners that want to get into this, and working with the industry that have been around and are going to continue to look for new sites.
Yeah, those were some. I went to the one at the first meeting that the Farmers Union and the Towns Association held at the 29 Pines Conference Center, and it was just amazing how deep and how complicated some of these issues are. And also, I was pretty impressed at the number of people from local governments that had gone there. So, it's an advisory role that the Towns Association plays. What is like the number one question or concern from these local governments? What do they want to know?
Well, we try to provide them, I think, the basic understanding of what their authority is. Now, you know, there are some people that are coming to town board saying, try to prohibit it, prevent it, don't let it ever happen. Other ones are saying, you know, protect us. And you mentioned some of the things in the lead-in about, you know, water quality, air issues, noise, impacts on the roads. And I think the number one thing for the town officers to understand is what authority they have. We try to tell them that, you know, there is authority. And this is not a new type of land use issue, but it's not a new issue from the standpoint of local government and local authority. We've had different types of land uses that have raised and gone in, you know, real hot cycles where there's a lot of pressure on local officials to do something. I can remember back when in the 1980s we closed a lot of town dumps, and then there was some new engineered landfills, and people were saying, what can we do to stop them or protect them and, you know, do things like that. Wind turbines 5-6 years ago was a hot issue. So from our role, what we're trying to do is have local officials understand what are their authorities, how they can enact them. And we do have strong local authorities, but they have to enact them in a reasonable manner.
And James Hare, I found an article that you wrote back in 2009 about a frac sand company that was drilling some exploratory wells in the Prairie Farm area. So what have you been noticing during your coverage when these companies first started showing up in larger numbers, prospecting and setting up shop, trying to get applications? What kind of reactions from citizens and town board members?
Yeah, thanks, Rich. First, I'd like to point out or recommend Rick's website to everyone who's interested in the conference. The complete conference packet is on his website and available to anyone who wants to see it. It's highly useful if you're studying up on this issue and starting from scratch. But to your point, I think that what we've seen most is it's sort of like grief therapy. You know, you go through certain stages, you find out things are coming, and then people sort of dividing up into camps a little bit, depending on how much they want to get involved in the cash flow situation. What happened around here is that a mine was permitted and locally, and pretty much under the radar, anybody's radar, and then they started shipping frac sand and made it quite a bit bigger. And it was a sort of an extension of a mom-and-pop sand and gravel operation.
Mm-hmm.
The sand and gravel, the sand, frac sand industry collapsed for a while, a couple years, and since 2009 there was a lull, and then it came back again with another company showing up with a prospecting claim that they were, and then they had various public meetings and show-and-tells, job fairs and whatnot. They did all that prior to having gone through the motions of filing their reclamation plan. And once they got the reclamation plan in place and started doing the engineering analysis, I think that they decided that there wasn't going to be any money in it, and they left.
Mm.
So there's a lot, you know, so it's a roller coaster from the town's perspective, but it did have that little experience did have the advantage of giving us the opportunity to form a committee and to look into mining ordinances or some kind of regulation of the sand industry, because we recognize that it's not just sand and gravel like the old days. This is something new, basically because of the scale of it. I mean, you're talking about 1 million tons a year. you can translate that in your mind to 41,000 trucks.
Sure.
24-ton trucks. So I don't think it's in dispute that it's going to change things significantly, particularly for people who are near neighbors or along haul routes.
Now, John Bailing, a lot of people are averse to change, and you're a representative for companies like High Crush and other sand mining operations. Do you understand the pensiveness, and do you think it's overblown?
I think there are some things that are definitely overblown, and there are some fears that are unfounded. I also think that if you have a good top-tier company and you have a town board that's dedicated to looking at the real science, that between negotiating and having an open door of communications, you can reach an agreement, which is frankly a win for the company and a win for the township. When I drafted the Town of Howard agreement, it was a 14-month negotiation. There were a lot of good questions. The board had the advantage of a retired UW professor who is an excellent researcher, and we at all times had an open door of communication. And ultimately, what we drafted, which has been used as a template document now for a lot of developers, and I think the Town of Howard document is a good example of a good company and of good government in terms of coming together. And ultimately, the Town of Howard, it was a unanimous decision when the town board voted on that development agreement.
And that was with, is that with EOG Resources?
Correct.
Correct. Now, Rick Stottleman, that I keep hearing about the Town of Howard agreement. Is that some kind of a shining beacon of what can be done between a town and a company that's looking to mine?
Well, we've used it, as John was indicating, as a template. That's, and I appreciate Jim's reference to our website. All the documents that we handed out and are online at our website, including the Town of Howard agreement. Our website, if people want it, is WISCTOWNS, WISCTOWNS.com, and that agreement is there. It's a sample. There's been some other agreements, but I think, as John was saying, it's been well put together. It covers a lot of areas which have been raised in these kind of issues, including a plan for diminution of value. It's got the basis for the road agreement. We also have a separate copy of a road agreement from the Chippewa County that's on our website. But, Town of Howard has been one of the lead ones that I know people have looked to.
And, John Bailing, the road agreement is that the company will help pay for a share of damage if there is damage from semis hauling sand?
Certainly. There is a separate agreement. Know that County Road B is a county road, and so the agreement's with the county. That is a public document, and it essentially, in that matter, the company said, we're going to use 5 miles of your road. We'll build it to a great highway standard, and essentially paid $2.8 million for 5 miles of a county road.
Hmm. All right. Well, go ahead.
Rich, I'd just like to make sure that people understand that there's a distinction between an ordinance, a non-metallic mining ordinance, and the developer's agreement.
All right.
One comes before the other, usually, because a town doesn't really have much authority or authority, if they don't enact their police powers through an ordinance to even enforce a developer's agreement. So if you don't do the one, you pretty much don't have any leverage to do the other.
Gotcha. And with that, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we will talk about the rise of police powers and moratoriums and village powers and all that complicated stuff. Some relatively new tools used by local governments to slow and regulate this industry. This is The West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is The West Side. Frac sand mining has come to western Wisconsin in a big way, and governments are scrambling to make sense of it, study possible mining side effects for the environment and public safety, and looking to regulate it. I'm joined by James Hare, editor of the Hay River Review, which has covered frac sand issues in and around Prairie Farm. John Bailing, an attorney for Weld, Riley, Pren, and Ritchie, which represents frac sand mining companies. And Rick Stottleman, executive director for the Wisconsin Towns Association. If you've got a question or a comment about how local governments are or should react to the frac sand mining boom, give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. And you can also post a comment or question on our West Side Facebook page. We will get into a little bit of these about these tools, specifically police powers and moratoriums that local governments are using. But first, I wanted to take a caller. And right now we're going to go to Jim in Barron. And Jim, I appreciate you sticking around on the line with us. What's on your mind?
Well, I got a couple things. First of all, excuse me. With the frac sand mining, it's going to help us try to lower gas prices with pushing the south oil out there. I just got a question out there on that. Wanted to get the panel's thought on that. But more importantly, talk about jobs, too, as well, to rural Wisconsin. I mean, opening up these frac sand mines could really help the local economy in rural Wisconsin, especially when unemployment's around 8 to 9% in the state. And I also want to congratulate Mr. Bailing, too, as well as getting to getting his nomination approved by the Board of Regents, and I'll just sit back and listen.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jim. And one example of people looking and craving jobs here in western Wisconsin was the job fair that Hi-Crush held in Augusta. There was 600 or some, close to 700 applicants, John Bailing.
682 applicants came during the snowstorm.
Yeah,
out to Augusta, and then we had another 100 people take applications or email in applications.
Sure.
And so clearly there is a need out there for the jobs.
And about the what about the domestic energy and gas prices and all that? What, any professional opinion there?
I think anything that helps stabilize prices and helps reduce some of the foreign reliance is a good thing. And clearly, frac sand helps improve performance at the oil rigs, which ultimately leads to better production and more oil.
Now, James Hare, I wanted to ask you.
I would like to address that if I could.
Please do. Please do.
I mean, the oil industry is an international industry. The prices are determined on the international market. You can talk about frac sand and saving us money at the pump, but they're just not connected. Having a lower supply doesn't necessarily mean you have a lower price. For instance, a huge percentage of the market right now is tied up in speculation. I don't know what the estimates are, but I've seen estimates that that it's quite significant in terms of what price we're paying right now. So it's a loose connection, to be sure. Absolutely, jobs are needed in the state. Mm. But I think we're dealing with a boom and bust here, and we have to look very closely at what kind of jobs they're going to be providing.
All right, and let's take one more call right now. We've got Jim in Chippewa Falls. Jim, you're on the air on the west side. Thanks for calling in, and what's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And my concern is, why the fuss over the hydraulic fracturing? Even today, in President Obama's address in Prince George's County in Maryland, he noted that there's been a decrease on U.S. dependence on foreign oil, presumably partially due to the hydraulic fracturing. And all of us are using gas, oil, whether we're for or against sand mining. And even the anti-frac sand mining people are driving SUVs and using gas and oil in that context. And we need the gas and oil unless we all want to live in cities. And even then, we're still going to use plastics and gas and oil to heat our homes. So I'm not sure what all the fuss is about since we're all consuming these petroleum products.
But
and I'm curious what your guests' thoughts are on that aspect of sand mining.
Thank you. Rick Stottleman, I'll put that one to you.
Well, we're not necessarily for or against frac drilling out in other states. In fact, what's going on in Wisconsin is not necessarily the same kind of impacts that are happening there. I mean, there's been some concerns raised, if you want to get into it, which is a whole other topic, about some groundwater issues out in the Pennsylvania where they're doing this type of frac drilling and water has been private wells. But from our standpoint and what we're talking about in Wisconsin is the actual mines have some impacts. And what are we doing in our own communities to protect our people in our own community, the community interest? And, again, we're not trying to say there shouldn't be frac drilling in other parts of the country, but the frac sand mining in Wisconsin in itself has some impacts for which towns are being asked to become involved and look at protecting community interests. So that's the issue that really is in Wisconsin, not whether frac drilling is good in other parts of the country or not, because we're not drilling oil in Wisconsin. We're not, we don't have that type of reserve. What we have is the sand that's being used to do that.
Right, right. Jim here, we are drilling the sand here in Wisconsin, but there's some concerns about groundwater because these wash plants do use a flocculant. I can't think of the name of the chemical, but the companies say that it's not harmful. But we did have a spill. A wash pond kind of blew out and got into some streams. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you can't move the kind of scale, the kind of tonnage that they're talking about without having some impact. And you can't, you know, live in this society without driving a car. The question is, how do we regulate what we do so that it doesn't externalize the cost onto powerless neighbors? You know, in other words, we all drive and use the oil. That's obvious. Mm-hmm. But in getting the oil, are we actually paying the true cost of it, or are we going to make our neighbors pay and dump our garbage in their lawn? It's a property rights issue at a certain level.
All right. A reaction, John Bailing.
You know, I think that in Wisconsin we're blessed with an extremely good DNR. I mean, I know a number of the DNR agents here, and they have come out and said, you know, oil company, yes, you can't do this, but you can do that. So I think we have a good environmental agency that's going to help lead the way on that issue.
All right, and with that, we'll break for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Let me remind you, you can check out the West Side Archives by going to WPR.org. Click on the West Side link and then on the Listen Here link. We've got years' worth of shows there available, plenty of content. Also, check out the West Side Facebook page. We'll be back with more West Side discussion of how local governments are responding to the frac sand mining phenomena here in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer, and this is the West Side. We're talking this hour about how local governments are handling the frac sand mining boom in western Wisconsin. With the promise of jobs and investment comes concerns from citizens about pollution, infrastructure, and even public safety. In response, local governments are studying these concerns and working to forge agreements with companies to mitigate these concerns. But are they going too far? Is this new industry getting a fair shake from citizens and local governments uneasy about change? Listeners, let us know by calling in at 800-228-5615. My guests for this discussion are John Bailing, an attorney for Weld, Riley, Prenn, and Ritchie, who represents frac sand companies; James Hare, a reporter and editor for the Hay River Review, which has covered extensively frac sand mining issues; and Rick Stottleman, executive director of the Wisconsin Towns Association. You can give us a question at 800-228-5615. Now, Rick Stottleman, when I first moved to western Wisconsin, it seemed like there was some confusion, this was about a year ago, about whether or not unzoned towns had any power to regulate frac sand mines or processing plants, but there was a recent decision by the state Supreme Court that seems to have settled it. I'm talking about the Cooks Valley case. Could you give us some background on this?
Well, the case reinforces the town's authority using village powers to adopt regulatory-type ordinances. First of all, you start with the principle that town government and county government are statutory bodies. And therefore, when we ask the question whether a town has authority, you have to normally have a statutory authority. But the granting of village powers, which the electors can do to the town board, they can say that the town board has village powers, which is the same authority that village boards have to regulate for public health and welfare, means that a town board with village powers could adopt a regulation such as a licensing or permitting ordinance over activities such as frac sand mining. Now, what happened is there was a challenge to the Cooks Valley in Chippewa County's ordinance last summer, in which the property owner and the mine there challenged the ordinance as being invalid because they didn't follow zoning procedures, and the court at the county or circuit level held that it wasn't a valid ordinance, that it attempted to be a zoning ordinance, mm-hmm. and therefore wasn't legitimately adopted using zoning procedures. It was challenged. It went to court. they say, the circuit court ruled against the town. It was appealed. The Court of Appeals certified it to the Supreme Court. And about a month ago, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, in a 6-0 unanimous decision, actually ruled that the town's ordinance was valid. It was an exercise of village powers that was legitimate. So it's reinforced basically an authority we've had for quite a while. Village powers is not new. I did some research on it. I could find in a statute back in 1905 that town electors could grant that to the town board. It's not meaning that all towns are villages. It doesn't mean we can do change our government. We are bound by statutes that govern towns, but in particular, using village powers, we can adopt regulations that are reasonable and not arbitrary to regulate activities such as this.
Did that create kind of a collective sigh of relief from town governments that were kind of on the fence of whether or not they had any power to regulate companies?
Well, I think there was questions about it from citizens who didn't want these kind of ordinances. At the same time, I think that from our association standpoint, it's a very strong case for any type of ordinance that's adopted for protection of public health welfare. So it's actually a very broad case, not just on frac sand mining, to reinforce the use of village powers on reasonable ordinances for public health and welfare.
Okay. Now, John Bailing, your law firm, Weld, Riley, Pran, and Ritchie, represented the plaintiffs, which were the landowners that argued the ordinance was an illegal use of a zoning kind of an ordinance. Do you think this decision provides an unfair burden for frac sand mining companies now?
I think you'll find that the majority of good top-tier operators are going to be able to satisfy the ordinance or in lieu of enter into development agreements, which satisfy so many concerns. Do I think that some of these, you know, newly found police powers will keep out some of the smaller operators? Absolutely, I do. But I think with the better companies, you're going to find that, you know, they will still move forward, enter into development agreements, and be able to create win-win situations.
Okay. And when we talk about top tier, you're talking about the larger, the High Crush, the EOGs versus Ma and Pa kind of?
You know, the way I kind of look at it is like cars. Some people like to drive a Ford and some people like to drive a Subaru. I think it's going to be up to town boards to determine, you know, are we dealing with companies we're comfortable with? Are we going to issue them the license? Have they answered all of our questions? And if companies haven't answered those questions, my sense is they're going to have a harder time with the police powers.
And Jim Hare over in Prairie Farm, I understand that the town is working on a type of ordinance for non-metallic mining right now. Was that Cooks Valley decision a green light for them to go ahead with this?
Oh, I don't know if they were waiting for that. There was some suggestion that we should wait for that, but I don't think that the board members were in favor were particularly inclined to wait. I think that over here we were interested in moving forward. I think that as John mentioned, the Howard model was where we started.
Mm-hmm.
We took great pains, I think, to identify and discriminate, if you will, the mom and pop, the traditional sand and gravel operations from the industrial sand mining, basically the scale of it defines it, and water use and various other things.
Sure.
And I think that they'll eventually move ahead with it.
And Rick Stottleman, I remember hearing some discussion during the meeting at 29 Pines put on by the Farmers Union and the Towns Association that you know, the larger companies are the ones that are willing to do take these steps, and the smaller ones are the fly-by-night operations. I heard that a lot. What are the concerns there?
Well, I think the point I'd make is that a reasonable ordinance should apply to everyone alike.
Right.
And if they have standards or operational requirements or in particular requirements that would protect the community interest, the roads in particular, we should apply it fairly to all. And the concern is that some of the smaller operators or people that just think they're going to get into business, I mean, I've often joked about it, but you're not going to start this type of business with a backhoe and pickup truck. You're going to have some type of expertise. I think you need to have some type of basic financial security and, you know, agreeing to meet the requirements, for example, for fixing roads, building roads, as John alluded to earlier, is going to be a cost that not everybody just can just get into. So the key here is that we have reasonable ordinances that apply to everybody. And quite frankly, I think you'll avoid the problems of having somebody come in who won't comply with it or will try to get around it. I think, as John alluded to, the top-tier companies, they expect to meet certain standards, and they'll be willing to do it. Hopefully, ordinances that are adopted under this authority are reasonable. We may have some that will go off the deep end and adopt standards or requirements that aren't reasonable, and we may have some additional lawsuits, but the authority to actually have a reasonable licensing ordinance is now validated.
And we'll go back to the phones, and Gene is calling from Eau Claire. You've got a question about some health concerns, Gene?
Oh, I don't have any questions. I have concerns. I moved out of Chippewa Falls related to health concerns and moved into the Eau Claire County area, and I was very pleased that the Eau Claire County members had enough concerns regarding this issue to have a moratorium. I really strongly believe that the attorney representing the sand mining companies making trivializing concerns related to health, related to depths of wells, relating to the increased truck traffic, you know, is really demeaning to property owners. And our input should be very important. And in all honesty, I think townships should hold a vote of people who really want this located in their area and the degradation to the environmental standards where they bought their properties in the first place. I think that, you know, just bringing in this industry, and I do know for a fact that some of these sand plants have very few employees and they're automated. So this promise of jobs is like ridiculous. And the other thing is why, if this is so great for us in our area here, why are not they paying royalties as they degrade our environment, take down our trees? It'll take 20 years to restore what we have right now. Loss of hunting, fishing, that type of recreational type things too. So, you know, this, you know, by demeaning our concerns as property owners about our air, water, and environment, I think it's just really rude and inappropriate.
Gene, let me get a reaction from John Bailing. John?
Certainly, and I guess I don't know what I said this evening, which made someone feel like I trivialized their concerns, but what I do know is that I think this industry is very similar to a trend we saw 10 years ago in the ethanol industry. It took a number of years to develop the Boyceville ethanol facility, and during that time period, there were similar concerns about air, water, odor, and items of that nature. And ultimately, what you had is a good cooperative of 525 farmers. They built a environmentally sensitive ethanol plant, and at the last tally, I believe they had six complaints since they were in operation, and four of them were determined to be complaints about another industry on the other side of Boyceville. And so are there concerns and questions? Yes. But I think that good top-tier operators can meet with local government officials and reach good agreements which address those concerns.
All right.
Rich, if I could jump in just here for a little bit. The caller's concerns are why I think local towns need to get involved. At the same time, she does need to know that there are some state laws that do apply and that already do provide some oversight and regulations. Now, whether they're strong enough, that could be argued there should be stronger ones. But first of all, as you mentioned, the degradation, and yes, there's going to be a change in landscape, but we've had a standard for non-metallic mines, sand and gravel pits, on reclamation for now about 10, 12 years. And that requires that when one of these mines is opened up, just as any other sand and gravel pit, they have to show a plan of reclamation. And as a part of that plan of reclamation, they have to post a bond and provide security to meet that plan of reclamation so that at the end of the use of the site, there's going to be a use that is going to be hopefully productive. Now, it may not be back in the same type of land use it was, but it actually is not going to be what we used to remember as the abandoned gravel pits. On the water side, we have high-capacity well requirements that DNR is involved with, 100,000 gallons of water a day, DNR permits. Now, These things apply to other types of operations, like livestock sites that are over 500 animal units typically may have more water usage, and so those are in place. The air quality issue on the silica sand, fugitive sand issue, there are some air emissions that apply. I know there are people that think they're not strong enough. The DNR has indicated they're going to beef up some of their monitoring, although up to this point they've indicated they've not found issues with the monitors that have been out there. On the water pollution side, the chemical that a flocculant you referred to earlier, Rich, the chemical itself is not necessarily a harmful chemical. It's actually a chemical, as I understand, is used in water treatment plants to purify water. The issue of having a large amount of it that can spill is of concern, but that's with any kind of chemical. So I think you need to understand that one of the things you have is there's a certain amount of regulation and oversight that the state has already set up. What we're trying to do from the town standpoint and emphasize is that we look at the issues of concern that most directly impact the community, the type of thing that this caller is concerned about, including something that was in the town of Howard agreement is a potential plan for diminution of value if neighbors feel their property values have been diminished.
Mm-hmm. Now,
hey, Rich,
go ahead, Jim.
Can I jump in here a second?
Go ahead, Jim.
With all due respect to both of these gentlemen, we just heard what I would consider two things that this woman on the phone would consider demeaning. First, John Bailing said that it basically compared the industrial frac sand industry to the single plant in Boyceville. Now, give me a break. The magnitude of the scale of the two industries, they're completely different. I mean, they're just not comparable. Okay. The other thing is that Rick has done great work, but I would allow that the polyacrylamide is in and of itself largely benign. The only problem is that it's contaminated on an industrial basis with some residual amount of acrylamide. Acrylamide is a neurotoxin and has many harmful effects. And there's some question of how long it takes to biodegrade. So what people are expecting is that these known issues are taken seriously and monitored so that we don't become the guinea pigs of a huge industrial experiment on our landscape.
All right. With that, we're going to take our final break here on the west side. We are talking about the relationship between the relatively new frac sand mining industry and local governments in western Wisconsin. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking this hour about various steps being taken by local governments in western Wisconsin to learn about and possibly regulate frac sand mining operations that are popping up at a pretty quick pace here. Four years ago, there were only a handful of frac sand mining operations. Now there are 60, with more looking to get started. I'm joined by Rick Stottleman of the Wisconsin Towns Association, John Bailing, an attorney that advises or that represents frac sand companies here in western Wisconsin, and James Hare, editor of the Hay River Review, a publication which has kept a close eye on frac sand mining issues in and around the Prairie Farm area. If you would like to get into the conversation, give us a call, 800-228-5615. We are getting close to the top of the hour. And we do have a caller online right now, but we are going to hopefully they can hold on for just a bit because I want to talk about moratoriums. Rick Stottleman, Jean brought up the fact that she was very pleased that Eau Claire County enacted a moratorium, which was a six-month moratorium. I believe it expires in May. We're seeing that more and more. What is a moratorium, and what is it not just delaying the inevitable, or is this a tool that the counties are using, counties and towns, to kind of get their heads around this whole issue or this whole industry?
The purpose of a moratorium is something to basically hold things in place before and to then develop the type of regulations and ordinances that were done in the town of Howard and it's being done in other communities. And it isn't to say that we're never going to have these type of operations, but it's in effect to give time to do the type of due diligence, to find the regulations, and to work on the concerns that the neighbors have, and to develop, if possible, all the things that should be in place. Jim Hare mentioned earlier about having an ordinance in place gives you leverage, and I think that is absolutely correct. You want something as a standard for which then the industry is expected to meet, and in the same time, then you have a basis by which you can negotiate agreements to do that. To this extent, a moratorium is not intended to prohibit forever any type of operation, and we don't use moratoriums just in this. There's been moratoriums used in other situations. There's been moratorium issues with wind siding, mm-hmm. wind turbines. We've had moratoriums in towns that have had potential large farms. So moratoriums is not a new feature, but it is something that helps people, communities, towns, and counties in particular, get their ordinances in place and then be prepared to go forward.
Now, John Bailing, as our listeners may know, Eau Claire County, we just mentioned it, enacted the frac sand mining and processing moratorium for 6 months. Your client, High Crush Propense, is one of two frac sand mining operations that has been directly affected by this moratorium, kind of halted. Is it warranted, or could this possibly drive off your High Crush and jobs or whatever economic benefits that would come with it?
Well, what I think we saw happen last week is kind of part of what we've been talking about. There is a moratorium in place, but the Eau Claire County Board, by a vote of 15-9, exempted High Crush from that moratorium, and they're allowing their reclamation permit application to proceed. So again, I think it's a matter of good communication, a company coming in with a good business plan, and in that matter, they entered into development agreements, again, with both the town of Bridge Creek and the city of Augusta, and both those were approved unanimously. So, you know, the moratoriums are put in place. One of the supervisors in Eau Claire County said, the reason I voted for it was so that the unzoned town of Bridge Creek would have an opportunity to decide whether or not they should opt in. Bridge Creek came back and said, we don't want county zoning, but we are going to do a development agreement. So in the eyes of that supervisor, the purpose of the moratorium had been satisfied.
There was another company, I can't think of the name right now, but wasn't very happy about the moratorium. They filed suit against the county, or they threatened to file suit. Why didn't High Crush get in on that lawsuit?
You know, the advice that our firm gave to High Crush was that, you know, we think that the better route versus litigation was to answer the tough questions and meet with supervisors and ultimately see if you could, you know, satisfy the purpose of the moratorium, which was to answer the tough questions.
All right. And Rick Stuttleman, before we finish up here, I really have to ask you what you think of Senate Bill 504. It's recent legislation introduced by some state lawmakers from the southeastern part of the state mostly, and it looks like it puts some restrictions on local government's ability to pass moratoriums. Do you think this is a reaction to frac sand mining? The lawmakers told me that it had nothing to do with it. But what do you think of this state taking control over local government operations in a way?
Senate Bill 504, which has passed the Senate, is scheduled in the Assembly today, and I've been following today the Senate debate. Has not been come up yet today, so it hasn't passed the Assembly. But it clearly has been an issue that's been around, not in terms of frac sand mining, but Wisconsin realtors have pushed for this moratorium of this type for at least 5-6 years. We've had discussions, league municipalities had discussions with them. What they intended to do and what this bill does, and I think it's limited in particular with the amendment that was adopted in the Senate, mm-hmm. not to apply to frac sand mining and not to apply to the moratorium authority for regulatory-type ordinances or licensing ordinances, which we're dealing here. It's intended to apply to rezoning and subdivision approvals in terms of comprehensive planning. For, you know, the last 10, 12 years, we've had a lot of communities that developed a comprehensive plan in response to the Smart Growth Law, and there were communities that adopted moratoriums on any rezones or any changes in land use or any new subdivisions. And the realtors and developers were concerned that some of those moratoriums for that were too long. So this bill puts a 12-month limit plus 6 months extension on moratoriums that would apply to rezoning and subdivisions. I don't interpret this bill right now, and if it were passed to be a law, to necessarily prohibit or limit our ability to have moratoriums. And by the way, it doesn't prohibit moratoriums even in the setting of the comprehensive planning for rezoning and subdivision. It just says you have to make certain findings in those cases. Right. I don't read this bill to apply to the frac sand mining. I think we still have the same authority, but we got to adopt reasonable moratoriums. You can't adopt 2-year, 5-year kind of moratoriums.
Right.
I think 6 months are reasonable, and I think it's, you know, that's still there, and this bill does not change our authority.
All right, let's go to the phones. We've got Terry from Colfax, has been waiting a long time. Thanks, Terry. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, I'm not so much a question, but I got actual experience. My daughter-in-law and my son live with us, and she takes her my grandbabies to the doctors in Chippewa Falls area.
Right.
She was so upset on Highway B that she had to call me on her cell phone to tell me. She says she can't believe the shape of the road.
Okay.
She says, you need to come out here and look at it.
Right.
Well, then her sister and her husband work on the north side of Chippewa Falls, and they've been fighting. So far, her brand-new car's had a rock hit her in the hood.
Gotcha.
And she called EOG, and they said, well, you have the rock. And she said, no, it's an act of God.
Terry, I have to leave it there. A very valid concern about roads. I'm sorry we don't have more time. But I want to thank all my guests, all the callers, for being part of this program. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about outdoors with the outdoor guys. I'm Rich Kramer. This is The West Side.